Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right, Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to Inside the Monster with Steve Perrault and Joey Capone.
Welcome to episode 60 of the official Red Sox podcast, Inside the Monster, presented by Odyssey with myself, Steve Perrault, and special co-host today, my dad. The Red Sox won a super important series this weekend against the Royals. How you doing, Dad?
Very good, Stephen. It was riveting watching that series as little as I did this weekend.
I tuned into every game, and it was big. Hey, 20 hits today. How about that?
Well, it makes up for the three they got on Friday.
Yeah, they still found a way to win that game, which was impressive. But
eight walks will do that for you.
That will do that. So Joey is in New Orleans. I think he's calling in at some point during this show. So we might be joined by one Joey Capone. He was at the Saints-Bucks game. He got to see Tommy Brady get a win, and he's down there for his buddy's bachelor party. So shout out to Joey. He has survived, which is good. Their place was on Bourbon Street, so I was a little concerned for my buddy Joe. But it seems like they had fun, and he might be calling in at some point. So we will see. A couple of stats from this series. Xander Bogaerts got his 1,400th hit with the Red Sox. I love using the stats of my guy JP. He's the PR guy with the Red Sox. So just shout out to you, Justin, because I'm using a lot of your stats today. But Red Sox players with 1,400 hits before turning 30, Carl Yastrzemski, Bobby Doerr, Jim Rice, and now Xander Bogaerts. Very impressive list to join. Most starts in a season at age 42 or younger in Red Sox history. David Wells, 24 starts in 2005. Rich Hill is now at 23. At the age of 42, he's got 23 starts this season for the Red Sox. That ties him with Tim Wakefield for 42 and older group. And Fangraphs, we've been following this all season long. They finally have the Red Sox at 0.0% chance of making the postseason. Dad, I know you were hanging on. I know you really thought that they were going to go undefeated to end the year here. But just so you know, it's finally over. They're not making the postseason.
Yeah, that's kind of the reason that last weekend there was only one reporter at Camden Yards while there were 21 reporters at the Patriots game. Yeah, that was the reason.
That had to be it. I mean, even if they go undefeated here, I think they got, 16 games left? That would put them at 87-75. They're fighting for 500. You probably don't think it's going to happen, right? Over 500 this season?
I don't think so, especially, Steve, where they're experimenting with some players. If they have the Almonte guy play one more game in center, that assures that doesn't happen.
Yeah, that was tough. That was tough in the Yankees series there. But, they haven't been under 500 since 2015. Obviously, I'm not counting 2020. In a full season, it's been 7 years since the Red Sox were under 500. Only one time in the last 28 years have they been under 500 in back-to-back seasons. So if you're looking for a silver lining, that could be a little something to look at. It was 2014 and 2015, the only time in the last 28 years the Red Sox have had back-to-back seasons under 500. Going to dive right into topics here. First one is Kevin Plawecki getting DFA'd. I know we were watching Pats and Sox. We're kind of flipping back and forth today. And I think you and I briefly talked about what the catching situation is going to be for the Red Sox next year. And Plawecki, I didn't necessarily see this coming. I thought they would have kept him on through the end of the season. He was hitting .217 in 61 games this year. They called up Franklin Hermann, who was part of the Ottavino deal coming over from the Yankees. He was a starter, but they converted him to a reliever this year. 43 relief appearances, 5-2 with a .271 ERA. Didn't really look great in his first outing this weekend. But again, this is a big part of DFAing Kevin Plawecki is to create space for other guys to now use this last 16 games as an audition. I know one big thing with Plawecki, the average obviously isn't great, but that's not why you had him, is being a clubhouse guy and being important on this team with some of the younger players. How much do you factor that in with guys the Red Sox bring on? Do you think I care a lot about it, but I know people have differing opinions on how much the clubhouse guy matters.
I mean, it matters assuming you can kind of carry your weight, but he initially came here as a defensive catcher, and it seems like his defense has actually waned while he's been here. Yeah. He used to occasionally throw guys out. I don't know what his percentage was. It was abysmal. And I think that was the death knell. And I was the one who brought up to you, it seemed a little unusual to move away from a veteran this late in the year. I guess they don't need anybody to push the home run cart. You know, somebody else will have to take that job. But at the same time, Cora mentioned it's hard with just a few guys you can bring up now. I think of this in the past when you get a 40-man roster or whatever, however crazy it was. There's never 40, but there were probably, you know, 35 guys there. Then I don't think you do it, but I guess I get it. You know, you got to see. McGuire, I'm assuming, is kind of, he's playing better for the Sox in his career, but to see a little more Connor Wong makes sense.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think, you know, we'll mention McGuire and Wong in a second. I just, these are the kind of things I care about. The home run card is actually something that I did want to briefly talk about because I think going into this season, and shout out to the Red Sox, I don't know if it was, I think it's got to be the social team that put together this cool video of Plawecki with the home run card and that it's back and all that. And I was actually pretty excited. I know last year it was a huge deal. It started in the COVID season. I think Veritek and Plawecki were behind that in the 2020 year that, honestly, I think that's the only really positive thing to remember from that season. But it felt like, I don't know, maybe you didn't need it for this year. And the longer this year's gone on, I think it's given some of the Red Sox naysayers something to point at. It's like, oh, God, they're 10 out and they're still doing the home run card. I think people need to, like, those are the kind of things that kind of drive me nuts, though, because if you're going to commit to a season, you're obviously going to do it for the whole season. You're not just going to, okay, guys, we're out of contention. Let's stop doing our home run celebration in the dugout. But I care about these celebrations. I care about team celebrations. I think they matter. I think they keep a club together. I just think it's probably the home run cart was nice, but I'm fully ready for the next dugout celebration for the Sox. I think it's time for something fresh, and we'll have to see what that ends up being. I know you probably... When do you think this even started? Because when you were watching games growing up, there wasn't a home run cart in the dugout. It seems like the team celebration thing is really pretty recent, last 5-10 years.
Oh, absolutely. You and I had the conversation a few weeks ago that supposedly, isn't that Dusty Baker who started the high five?
I couldn't believe it. Joey told me that.
Yeah.
I had never heard that in my entire life, that Dusty Baker invented the high five like in the 80s.
Yeah, so I think, but that's it. That's everything in a nutshell. If you only had a high five since the 80s, you know, that was celebration in the 80s with somebody giving someone a high five. So yeah. Home run carts and guys doing bat flips and other things. There was none of that then, you know?
Yeah. So you don't care much for the home run cart or like wind dance for Pete? That didn't do much for you?
No, I don't mind it. I mean, I know your mother likes it, but
yeah.
So I do think it has, and the fandom is broader than it was in the 60s and 70s. So I think you have to adapt at times, you know, and obviously there's there were Latin players then, but not the number of Latin players now, who bring a lot of enthusiasm to the game. I'm not trying to generalize, but I think there's more joy with the Latin players than there is with some of the American-born players, I think. Not always, but I think that's generally fairly true. I think they have so much competition to get there, far greater than American-born players, because it's their one opportunity probably to play in the bigs. And so who can blame them for celebrating? So I think it's fine. I'm not going with you. Maybe you should freshen it up every now and then. And by the way, you kind of softened Germán's performance. I was looking at the stats this morning. He literally has an infinity ERA because
he didn't get an out, right?
Two hits, two walks, and allowed four runs.
It's not great.
Nowhere to go but up.
No, it wasn't an ideal debut. But I mean, at that point, the game was over. I was kind of watching Halfley. I'm like, oh, okay, it doesn't look like it's going great. Oh, and would you look at that? We are joined from New Orleans by the one and only Joey Capone. What's going on, Joey?
Oh, nice to get out of Metro.
Yeah, this is about as much effort as I'm willing to do right now. I don't know what I sound like to you guys. I got my own mic over here. So if I don't sound great to you, just ignore that.
Is your mic selected on StreamYard as the audio?
No, I'm recording on the Zoom here. So don't mind what I sound like on this. I'm going to sound different over here.
Oh, I'm not rolling on QuickTime. So like this is only StreamYard.
Then this is going to be horrible to edit. I feel bad for whoever's editing this show.
No, I'm saying you can't. Oh, so that's not going to plug into the laptop?
Zero chance.
So it's actually not. Joey doesn't sound that bad. If anything, it's like, we head to the road with Joey Capone. This sounds like you're on the road. So I think it actually fits.
All right. Perfect. All right. I'm going to keep holding the mic to feel like I'm doing something and just not edit the mic footage in at all. Audio in at all.
No, you're
how, totally how are you doing? How's the Northeast? I miss it so much.
Oh, it's wonderful. But it doesn't matter how we're doing. How's New Orleans?
I mean, this town's something else. This town.
Yeah.
I'll say that.
Yeah.
I'll say that. I went to the Saints Bucks today. Yesterday I went on a big fishing excursion in the bayou.
There you go.
Day before that, I was on a riverboat on the Mississippi River. And tonight, I think I'm just trying to survive, dude. I mean, like 5 days here is too much. You can't do it. Yeah. You start to lose your brain a little bit. Like the people that live here, they're living on a different plane, man. Like they're out here wearing skirts and like dressed like Homer Simpson. And like, I'm not ready for that, you know?
Yeah.
So the longer you're here, the closer you drift closer to that, you know?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, so trying to avoid that, but it's been great here, man. It's been great. Here's the big thing. I've loved watching the Sox while I'm here, taking time out of my day every day to watch 9 innings, 27 outs, every single pitch of every Sox game, which I've totally done.
Yeah. What's your biggest takeaway from the series after watching every pitch?
Ugh, there's so many.
How do you boil it down?
I know.
So many takeaways. I mean, you and I were talking about even before the Yankees series, like so many things on the line, you know,
there's a lot of implications. That's what we were saying. Yeah.
Implications. That's the word. Thank you for remembering. Cause I couldn't implications. Yep. So many implications, man.
20 Bobby hits Witt today. Jr.'s cool. That was big. Yeah.
Witt Bobby Jr.'s Witt cool. does doing the same thing as Pedroia, you know, swinging before he gets in the box. That's cool. I think that might be the biggest one.
Yeah. It was the biggest takeaway for you.
That was the big takeaway. Plawecki, obviously, that stinks, man. Bradford got some good quotes from Nate and Rich. I thought that was really telling. That really opened my eyes. I mean, when guys are willing to speak like that, I got a reply on my tweet because I quote tweeted that Bradford clip, and I got a reply.
I got a feeling Bradford's paying you. You mentioned Bradford in every show. I think he's paying you to mention him on here every episode.
WEEI had some really great quotes.
There you
and,
go.
And
by the way. Yeah.
No, I know.
Odyssey had some great quotes.
That's there we
and
go. Remember who
our parent company. Yes. Yeah. Our parent company Odyssey, who I love very, very much.
Of course.
They had some quotes from Nate and Rich, and I quote tweeted it and just said like, oh man, this is really telling, you know, these guys are really, really speaking their minds here. And somebody said something that really stuck out to me. I think they just worded it really great. And I always have respect for people that are able to word something perfectly. And I think this Twitter user really did. And he said, I think guys are frustrated that they're not being rewarded for how last year ended. And I think that's a great way to sum up this year, that they were like, okay, I thought we would have been all in. We were 2 wins away from going to the World Series. You'd expect us to cash in and move forward. And Nate mentioned by name Kyle Schwarber and Hunter Renfro. And he's like, those are not only clubhouse guys, but obviously huge contributors on the field. It just felt like, I think that person summed it up really great when he was like, these guys are probably frustrated that this team isn't close to that. I'm probably frustrated with the people upstairs that they didn't cash in and go all in for it. And yeah, I think that's the biggest takeaway from this is the Plawecki and the ripples from that, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, there's a lot of frustration to go around and a lot of it going into this year. And I think, Joey, we talked about this in our preview episode of our season preview episode of everyone's going to have to click. Like, you know, I think we looked at last year as like, oh, you got 2 wins away from a World Series. You were also 2 losses away from just missing the playoffs. So it was so close that you barely even made the playoffs. Obviously, the wild card game goes well. The DS goes well, and then you get a series lead in the ALCS. That kind of made us forget about the fact that they almost even just straight up missed the playoffs. So, yeah, I think a lot of things needed to click. And I know for an ITM 60 for the pregame show on Friday, I was just talking about the bullpen. And the opening day bullpen, if you go down the list, it is just DFA, 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 Brazier like a 6 ERA, Matty Barnes, we know the up and downs that he's been through. You were really banking on a lot of guys to do well. I forgot Schreiber wasn't even on the opening day roster.
He got called in Worcester.
He started in Worcester. So it was like, that's a guy that's been
crazy.
He was a savior for them, and he wasn't even on the opening day roster. And obviously we know the deal with Whitlock and, you know, going back to the rotation and back to the bullpen and all that. But no, I think it is, you know, valuable to talk to guys like Eovaldi that have been there, done that, and have been around this specific core and kind of seeing how, you know, everything goes down here. But overall, with the catcher situation, Reese McGuire has been hitting .394 since he joined the Red Sox. That's 26 games played. I was curious. I thought it was way more than Vasquez, but it's basically the same. Vasquez, 25 games for the Astros, hitting .247. And I know more of those are probably not starts than Reese has gotten for the Sox. But overall, McGuire's got a .923 OPS with the Red Sox after going, I believe, 3-for-4 on Sunday. Vasquez, .544 with Houston. So, Dad, I am curious of your opinions, your thoughts. I would say between the deadline of, like, where you were at when they traded him and now where you're at seeing a lot of McGuire and a little Connor Wong as well.
Yeah, I think one of the big losses, almost touching on what Joey's saying about Plawecki, is Vasquez's value to the team beyond his stats. So clearly it had an effect. A fan can always say, well, look, these guys are paid to play baseball, and whether a guy comes or goes, it's part of the business, and they'll always say that. But I think they were affected by him being traded. You know, the fact that McGuire statistically is better than him, I don't know if that fully translated. I mean, you never know if Vasquez had stayed here. Would that have translated to 2 or 3 wins? I don't know. It's hard to say. Because you're right. They removed some guys from the chemistry from last year who were good chemistry guys. And then, you know, I think Heim, you're right. The margin of error for this team going into the year was so marginal because, you know, it's most of the scribes picked exactly what the shorthanded, where they were shorthanded. Right-handed hitting outfielder, not enough depth in the bullpen, and all the starters are going to have to go and other guys are going to have to step up, most of which didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that definitely hurt you a lot. And catcher wise, though, I mean, do we feel, does this crew right here feel good with McGuire and Wong for next season? Are you good with that, Joey?
I mean, I'm fine with it, but that's not the point because it's not 2023 yet.
But the thing is, a big point of this is like it's a more time for them to catch, more time for them to audition for 2023.
I guess, but like, isn't that what spring is for?
No, that, I mean, these are real games. That's, you know, you got what, 16 MLB games left.
I think the point that Nate and Rich Hill both made was like, look, there's 2 weeks left and these games really don't matter. Can we not keep the guy that we all like around? Like, this guy is the DJ on the bus. He's the DJ in the clubhouse. He's the guy who inspired the theme song of the postseason last year. He's the guy who takes guys out fishing on days off. Like, he's everybody's friend. We understand he's hitting 160. We know that. But can we not keep him around for 2 weeks? Like, we need that one roster spot. Like, you need that one roster spot? Okay, Abraham Almonte is still on this team.
Correct.
Maybe that's the guy you get rid of?
Yeah.
Like, if you desperately need that one spot, there's no way he's the bottom of the list. Like, statistically or intangibles-wise. I think that's what's so upsetting for the players and for me, too. When I saw that, I was like, no way. Like, there's so little time left. There's no way that these two-week auditions are really going to mean anything, you know? Like, you and I don't think any three of us, believe that Frankie Germán coming out and giving up, you know, letting the four batters he faced all reach base means that he stinks, period. Means right. That there's no way that he ever makes it in the major league. We don't believe that. So, like, what are these 2 weeks really going to tell you?
Well, they'll tell you more than not having these 2 weeks. I think you got to salvage whatever you can for the rest of the way. And I'm sure most guys in the clubhouse, you think Nate Evaldi's going to give you a quote of like, yeah, I'm fine with Plawecki being gone. He's like, come on, they're buddies.
That's what you'd expect. You'd expect him to be like, hey, yeah, it's a business and I'm going to miss him and blah, blah, blah. That's what you'd expect for him to speak out this much. For him to speak up and be like that, that upsets me.
I'll have to see the quotes. I'll have to see what the quotes actually are. I can't think.
He said like, I'm very disappointed in the decision. I think we should have left him.
Well, especially. Yeah, Steve, I do think the point Joey's making is there are guys on this, whatever it is, 27, was it a 28 man roster now? Something like that.
Yeah, there's other guys you could. Yeah.
There's other guys that I don't even want to see at all. So I understand if Plawecki doesn't play for the last 2 weeks, I get that, you know. You and I've had the same conversation against Jackie Bradley. I don't think Jackie was as sociable probably as Plawecki. But what did they really gain by getting rid of Jackie? We had to pay him for the rest of the year. You know, I actually think they would have won a few games.
I think Jackie has more value than Plawecki. That's for sure. I would make more of the on-field case for Jackie staying. Yeah.
But I think you could have kept both of them given how marginal, because I was reading a thing in the Globe today about how Bloom says, we're going to have some tough decisions on the 40-man roster. And I was looking at some of the guys on it now. I said, I'm not sure they're that tough. I think there's about six or seven guys on it now, including Jeter Downs. Does any of us think Jeter Downs is going to be a player?
No.
You know, so there's six or seven guys now that you could take off. That there's the seven guys you could add to it, you know? So then and everybody they cut basically, at least 90% of them, don't get picked up by anybody. When they designate someone for assignment, how many get picked up? Austin Davis, was he the only one? I think
I think he's the only one this year. Yeah,
that tells you something, right?
That tells you where your roster's at. Yeah,
correct.
No, if that's going to be the case, then obviously it shows you that you don't have a lot of depth that's going to be valuable by other teams. But yeah, I mean, either way, it's hard for me to get like too emotional. And Plawecki was great. Plawecki's one of the handful of guys that I would consistently talk to. There's not many, and you know, most of the guys on this roster are very, you know, get there, play ball, and don't really want to do a lot of the schmoozing. Plawecki kind of had that fatherly figure amongst a team that has a lot of younger players. And I think that was valuable. That mattered. And having that around mattered. And I'm sure guys that he was close with, like Evaldi and other, you know, Rich Hill, other guys that look out for each other, you know, veterans are always having each other's backs. Obviously would have preferred that he was here for the last 2 weeks, but overall,
we were around Michael Wacha. We weren't talking to him, but we kind of overheard a conversation with him. And he said, Plawecki's basically my PC. He's like, I've never had one before, but he's like, I would pick him just because like I love the guy and I have a great time with him. And whenever there's a day off, we go and do something. He's always making me laugh. He's so fun. And just was standing there talking strictly about Kevin Plawecki.
Yeah,
it's what a great guy he is.
Yeah, of course.
It's one of those things, like, you're not in the hunt for wins. So why, like, cut some fat here because you might be able to sneak out a win? That's obviously not, like, not what we're talking about. We don't think that's their motivation. Their motivation is to try to get some guys up and get some time. It just, to me, really felt like the wrong place to cut fat. I'm just, I'm not on board with it, and I'm sure that a lot of the guys in there are not. It sounds like a lot of the guys in there are not. They're not really being quiet about it. Seems like the kind of thing these guys would be quiet about, and they're just not. It was the toughest thing to take away from this. And I don't know if there's a bigger takeaway from this Royals series, because the one game I watched was game two.
You watched every pitch. What are you talking about?
Sorry. I said the one game I watched in the hotel.
Oh, right. Sorry. Cut out during that part. Sorry.
It must have skipped. Yeah. Yeah. The other two, I locked myself in the coat closet of the lobby.
Makes sense.
And I watched on my phone every pitch. Yeah. Came out after 4 hours. And yeah.
That's important.
Now, I Joey, picking up on your Porlicky thing, though, it may be the last guy that I usually say anything favorable about is Joe Maddon, because Stephen knows that I really don't like him. I think he thought he was always the smartest guy in the room. But when Joe Maddon starts being critical about, you know, guys who are just looking at, you know, statistical things and those guys running the game, and I've heard your interviews with Bloom, I literally like him. But at the same time, I think you have to take into effect, especially at the end of the year. I mean, he shouldn't make a decision this offseason to re-sign Kevin Porlicky because he's a good guy.
Yeah.
But you've got some guys you may want to re-sign, including Michael Walker, who I know, Steven, you want to get to, that if that's going to go the wrong way, you should be cognizant of that, you know, to be tone deaf to the vibe in the locker room. When there's two or three guys, we each might have two or three different guys we just cut off this roster right now. That you didn't have to move them, even if you didn't play them, you know.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. I don't think they should have, with 2 weeks left, done this. But I'm not going to be devastated over what's happening. It's not. We should still need to understand who Kevin Plawecki is. He knows what his role is. He's a backup catcher, and they have two catchers that are going to be part of the future of this team, and they want to see more of them. So I understand, but I didn't. The point of this was not for it all to be on.
Yeah,
you know, the impact, but it's more that should, I get it. That should factor in. And if anything, I think the combo of that with Jackie is the interesting thing to me, because Jackie then being out of the equation and immediately being back, what, a week later with the Blue Jays and making it look like continuing to look like it's the easiest thing ever to play at the outfield in Fenway Park, which no one that they have, Kike included. I think Kike's come back down to earth a little bit defensively. And I know maybe it's just I'm playing games with myself, but when he signed the contract, I feel like he's ticked it up a bit defensively. Maybe that is just me making that up. But I think overall, it's obviously been a disappointing season for many different, you know, reasons. And it's going to be hard for Bloom to make certain decisions that are including guys that this team likes. He clearly thinks that those decisions are necessary. Now, the Vasquez one is being criticized a little less considering what you've gotten in return at the deadline and how they performed, but it can't be overlooked. I mean, Bogey looked so dejected after that Vasquez deal. So that's part of it. That is part of it. Of like, these guys want to know that you still understand that the chemistry of the team matters. So I think that is important. I think the Vasquez discussion and a Plawecki discussion are way different, obviously, of the importance of, you know, clubhouse and just vibes of the team. But either way, I'm going to be interested to see if Reese McGuire can be the main catcher for the Red Sox next year. He hadn't played more than 78 games in a season heading into this year. I think Sunday was his 79th game total, split between the teams. So we'll see if he'll be able to do that. Do you guys feel like he'll be able to be the main catcher for next season?
Yeah, you know, it's worth a shot. I mean, I think that's a position. If you're looking to get defense, don't they have Hernandez in the minors or something? Yeah. You could get a defensive catcher. I mean, they have so much bigger holes to fill, and we could go to the bullpen and the starting rotation, and an impact outfielder would be come way before I talk about catcher.
Yeah.
And Wong has progressed. He's 26 years old.
They're about the same age, honestly, which caught me off guard.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's worth a shot in the sense that you could certainly go into next year, like Joey said, and see how it shakes out, knowing you can always pick up the equivalent of Sandy Leon or something like that if you suddenly needed a guy just to field a position that pitchers like throwing to. The other things to me are way more important. But, I mean, both those guys look like they have a little bit of a stick, you know, so
And it's a position that you're not necessarily going to need to blow the world away with, you know, offensively. It's you got your catcher, yeah, who's a guy that as long as he has good relationships with the pitchers, they prefer throwing to them, which Reese McGuire, it seems like it's all good feedback. I haven't heard anything negative. What's that look, Joey?
If only there was a guy that all the pitchers really liked and really liked
Joey,
throwing to.
The reaction really you're having enjoyed to this Plawecki thing is like they killed him. Like it's there's 2 weeks.
It's just the
season,
dumbest
Joey
thing. I'll be totally candid. It's the dumbest thing you could have done. The games don't matter. Let the guys hang out with the guy they like.
How
why
do they not matter? How do players that haven't had MLB
what do these games mean?
Joey,
what do they mean?
You're being crazy. You're being crazy. How do
oh,
MLB
sorry, the,
games
sorry, the playoff
not
implications
matter
here? If they win 19 straight,
Joey,
play,
the
games don't mean anything.
It's the competent. You're playing at the MLB level. That matters. What are you talking about? I agree with your point that other guys
games don't matter. Just let them let the guys have fun. Let them have fun. Let them like each other.
Yeah, let's let them have fun. Your point about other guys being like, oh, totally agree. You didn't have to let Plawecki go. Somebody else could have gone. But to say that MLB games and experience doesn't matter is a little crazy.
I'm saying, do these games matter win loss wise?
No, experience wise, you're playing against teams that are trying to make the.
That's
playoff
what I mean. It's like win loss wise, the games don't account to anything. They don't. They don't mean anything. So like why
the experience
why,
they do mean something. How are you not seeing the experience part matters?
But who are you going to call up that you need the need 14 games experience from and that you can't cut anybody else besides Kevin Plawecki for? That's what I'm over the Plawecki thing. I'm not trying to harp on
no,
it too
we'll
much.
We'll spend 2 hours on it. I agree. I agree that it could have been somebody else. I'm there with you. I just think in terms of salvaging what's left in the season, is 16 games going to be earth shattering? No, but it's more than zero.
It just says something. It says something to the guys in the clubhouse.
Yeah.
That's what I think it does.
Yeah. I'm in between you guys, but I get the idea. You've mentioned Walker and Hill. You clearly want to bring Walker back. And you and I were talking today, yeah, Steve. I think if he's going to sign for the same money, you'd bring Hill back. Yeah. So given that those guys, I was thinking of the analogy of a guy everyone loved in a former team. It would be like Mike Timlin. If Timlin was having an off year, and let's say 2009 or wherever the hell it was, he wrapped up and he wasn't effective anymore. But he was the guy that go hunting and fishing with and whatever. And I've learned, I kind of knew they liked Plawecki. I didn't realize how much the veterans did. And so
they were close. Yeah, they were close with them.
And if you're looking to re-sign these guys, I'm just saying that's almost, I don't know if it's a missing link that Haim has, that he has to recognize chemistry is a tangible thing. And again, it's not chemistry and changing wins or losses or anything, but it may be one of the last memories of Rich Hill and Walker is, Haim, you didn't give a shit when you cut this guy. You know, yeah, you didn't think of any of the ramifications of it. And sometime that matters.
I think the ramifications for a guy that matters carried a little more weight with Vasquez because it's 2 months versus what we're looking at here. But yeah, I mean, either way, I'm just very interested to see what the catcher situation is next year. And we knew Plawecki wasn't likely going to be back.
No, I didn't want to resign him.
No, and he should be somewhere else. I think he's still good enough to play on another big league roster. And I'm interested to see, you know, where he ends up. And if he comes back to Fenway with another team, he should get a good ovation for what he meant to this club. But either way, we are ready to
water
talk
gun. Last thing, if we can close on this real quick, water gun to your head, two water guns, super
water
soaked,
balloons,
each of my hand, both of your heads. All right.
Yeah.
Two water balloons over each of your heads. Okay. you're sitting on a dunk tank.
Yes.
Who are the starting catchers opening day for the Boston Red Sox?
Multiple starting catchers.
Well, who's on the roster? Who are the two catchers that are on the opening day roster?
Water gun to my head. I think it's these two guys.
I think it's me three.
And if it's two water guns, then I'm going to say these guys because I got to be a little more definitive when it's two. I agree, Dad, with what you're saying about there's just plenty other areas you're going to have to attack before you got to look at the catcher situation. So that's a big part of it.
Yeah, the bullpen being number one.
The bullpen, I'm sure we'll touch up on that a little bit. But we got to take a break. Coming back, we will talk a little starting rotation, a little Michael Walker, a little Rich Hill. That is up next on episode 60 of Inside the Monster. We are back on episode 60 of the official Red Sox podcast, Inside the Monster. We're barely ahead of Aaron Judge. We are trying to stay ahead of his home run total. Judge is now at 59. We're at 60 episodes. That's going to be an interesting one to follow the rest of the way. Joe, you think we end up with more episodes this season than Judge home runs?
That's really interesting, bro. And it's crazy it's taken us this long to realize that they've kind of been synced up.
We probably should have before the Yankee series. That would have made more sense.
Yeah, maybe mention that.
Yeah,
there's a lot of heavy hitters on this.
New
Orleans is a crazy town, man. Yeah, a lot of Sox have worn number 60.
Yeah, Tyler Danish, active number 60. If you could have given me 20 guesses, I would not have said Tyler Danish is number 60. And I'm pretty good with the jersey numbers. But a guy that Michael Wacha. What's Michael Wacha? Do you know what Michael Wacha's jersey number is?
I don't.
He's like. I feel like I should remember this. I think he's in the 50s.
We've had a couple other great number 60s throughout the years. Henry Owens.
Owens.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. High draft pick, no promise.
Yeah.
Daniel Nava and Daniel Bard.
Ryan LaVarnway, by the way, is great on TikTok.
Oh, he's good. He's good.
He's
good.
He's gotten a pretty good following there. And he's very funny. I didn't know he was funny. I'm watching these videos. I'm like, yo, LaVarnway's hilarious. Where did this come from?
He's from Yale, so he at least is smart.
Yeah.
there's another Sox prospect who's on TikTok right now who's really big. I don't remember who it is, but there's somebody Bizarro? On there. It's Bizarro. It's Edward Bizarro who's real big on TikTok right now.
There we go. You know who's real big on the Red Sox rotation? One guy really stands out, and it's Michael Wacha. Michael Wacha got the no decision because the Red Sox couldn't get any runs across the board until later in the game in game one of this Royals series. But we've talked about Dad. I know you bring up pitchers' records, and I'm not good with their records anymore. I used to care a lot more about the records, but the fact that Wacha only has one loss this year in 20 starts has to count for something, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you're in every game he's in. So, because again, yeah, you're right. If it's you can be 11-1, guys have been 18-3. I mean, Daisuke is the ultimate one. What the hell?
Was he 18-3? You just said his record. Yeah,
18-3, and his average he averaged 5 2/3 innings.
He was you know? Talk about painful to watch. Yeah,
yeah. So, but you're right. I think Wacha. I guess the only worry I'd have. I think they'll probably re-sign him. I think he likes it here. You know, Kevin Willicke notwithstanding. He's probably wants 2 or 3 years. I don't think he likes the 1 year contract idea. He's only what? 31 or 32?
He's 31. Yeah.
He's 31. I mean, you and I, you know, we went to that Cardinals, World Series. And he was on that Cardinals team in 2013.
I know.
You know?
Yeah.
So
he was young.
Yeah. So, I think he's got the right makeup, I think. And, you never know with injuries, but then you look at, I don't compare to Verlander, but Verlander came back off of, and you look at Adam Wainwright, some of these guys, once they get over the hump, they're okay.
Yeah. No. And especially at this point of a career, right? Where it's, yeah, he's got some miles on him, but Rich Hill's 11 years older than Michael Wacha. I think I know Rich Hill's the oldest pitcher, but still, I mean, that's still pretty crazy.
I mean, that's a long time, dude. Think back to when your 11-year-old was born.
Exactly. Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, exactly. What's his name again? Just 11-year-old. Do we have a name yet? I don't think so.
No, you haven't named him yet, dude.
It's up to you and
your old lady to decide.
No, I know. Old lady. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, he signed a 1 year, $7 million deal. Michael Wacha is coming off of, now he's got what, 3 straight 1 year deals. You had one with the Mets in the shortened season, then the Rays last year. And this season, shout out to Justin. He had some really good Michael Wacha stats here. Let me just make sure I'm getting this right. Okay, Michael Wacha, 11-1 with a 2.61 ERA and 20 starts with Boston. Prior to Wacha, the last pitcher to post an ERA that low and lose only 1 or 0 games in their first 20 starts with a team was Whitey Ford with the Yankees in the 1950s. He was 14-0 with a 2.24. So it's been a while. It's been a while since that's happened. And this is interesting, too. Now, you never want to compare anybody to Pedro Martinez, but this was just these were interesting stats. This, again, from Justin, our boy, at Sox Notes, I believe. I always feel like I'm saying his handle wrong, but I think I get it right every time. ERA, first 20 starts with the Red Sox. Michael Wacha, 2.61. Pedro Martinez, 2.72. Win-loss, Wacha 11-1, Pedro 12-3. Average, opponent average, Pedro 2.09, Wacha 2.16. Whip, Pedro 102, Wacha 103. K to walk, Pedro 156 to 37, Wacha 92 to 26. Innings, Pedro 142, obviously Wacha's less with 114. And home runs, Wacha 11, Pedro 18. A little different because of the innings pitch there. But it was nuts to think that in the first 20 starts with the Sox, Pedro Martinez and Michael Wacha have similar stats. So overall, I agree with you, Dad. I think it'll be a multi-year deal he's looking for, especially what he's – I mean, these stats are pretty ridiculous for what we expected. But do you think the Red Sox are going to be his home next season?
I think there's a reasonable shot. It sounds to me – I've just seen an interview with him where he seems to like the area. I think there's a reasonable shot, but he's certainly broadened his market. And even though he had, what, two stints on the DL this year, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
On the IL.
IL, whatever they call it. but he's bounced back each time.
Yes.
My fear was he would be good until, okay, what happens if a wheel falls off? Can they put it back on? It would be good. And he has been.
Yeah.
So I think that shows me something. In this day and age, how many starts has he made?
20.
Yeah. I mean, you'll sign up for that. I mean, overall, I mean, you're not going to get any Bob Gibsons or Mickey Lolich's anymore. So that's what it is today. You need to have seven or eight guys who might, between you, give you enough, like 130 starts, you know?
Joey, you think he's coming back?
I sure hope so, dude, because you need at least two new arms in this rotation. And if Michael Wacha leaves, you need three new arms.
Correct.
Yeah.
So I would sure hope he's coming back. I like him a lot. He's also a liked guy. The guys seem to like him. So
Heim's getting rid of him, is what
you're saying. So if that's any indication, Heim's already booked his bus ticket and he's out of here. Nah, man. I mean, who knows? Paxton's kind of a question mark. Sale's a giant question mark, but I still think you need at least two guys. So I hope Wacha's coming back. I think he likes it here. If I had to bet one way or the other, I would say yeah. But probably the last contract of his career, so he might try to go for something long. He might go for 3, maybe 4 years and try to you know, get as much as he can, capitalizing on this great year that he's had. But who knows, man? I don't know. I think we've talked about it a little bit already. It's hard to even think about the rotation when the bullpen looks the way it does. It's like, okay, these are like two or three arms that you need. But the bullpen, you need like four good, reliable pieces.
Well, especially when your rotation only is not going deep. I would like to see average innings per starter this year for teams. Sox got to be in the bottom.
Yeah. Sure, but like if you're keeping Cutter in the rotation, and if Brian Bayo's, presumably, I think it's the easier one to say, yeah, that he's going to be in the rotation, you expect they're going to go longer next year than they have this year.
You would hope.
So that considered, it's like, okay, those are two young guys, come up through the system, like they're maybe going to be a little more reliable. We can lean on them a little bit more, but you still can't give your bullpen like six innings a game, like. And when your bullpen is Hirokazu Sawamura, followed by Ryan Brazier, followed by whoever we just grabbed off waivers. So as much as I want to think about the rotation, it's hard not to think about the bullpen the second we mention them.
Joey, it is your last night in New Orleans. I know you are heading out soon.
You're kicking me off the show. That's all right.
I'm kicking you off the show. No, you said you had 5 minutes. Any closing thoughts?
Mr. Peralt. If you're looking for a co-host, if you're looking to start a show and you need a co-host, hi, how you
there
doing?
You go. Okay.
Hey, you got my number.
Okay. So
I think this is a great duo you got here. I think you and I would go to the moon.
Yep. There you
so
go.
You let me know. But yeah, no, I'm going to get out there. We're staying like right on Bourbon Street. So, we're going to pop out there one last
time. Right. It's just really casual on that street.
Yeah, everybody wants to give you a hug, give you money. People have been putting money in my pockets everywhere I go. Super nice. Nah, dude. I mean, well, I'll give you like the long story when I get back and when my head's a little more on straight. Yeah. But this is a crazy town. People should not really be living here. This place is. I don't know if anyone's ever told you that New Orleans is a wild town, especially this part of it. Holy cow.
Yeah.
But yeah, great Royals series. Lots of takeaways. Lots of implications. It's not over yet.
It's not over yet. That is true. Joey, thank you for hopping on and enjoy. And say what's up to Jackson. Congrats to Jackson on surviving the weekend as well.
I will do, man. And one more thing. Cutting Kevin Plawecki really makes it feel like the Heim Bloom.
On that note, he's gone.
On that note, I wish I said I had kicked him out of the studio, but I was going to let him get one more Plawecki thing in. I don't think I've gotten that animated at Joey ever. He was caring so much about this. The quotes about Kevin Plawecki. Would you believe that?
I mean, I do think it's a thing, and it's kind of like Dan Duquette was kind of accused of the same thing of kind of being inert to the personality of players. And I think Dan isn't the most vibrant guy, but I think it's probably a misrepresentation of who he is. Yeah. You've had him on the show, and he really is. He gets the whole picture, but I think it is a thing that Heim has to look at. I mean, that is the thing with managers and general managers. You have to look, what could I do better? And I think the personal side is a thing that you got to weigh in to some extent. I mean, what happens if somebody's going after Michael Wacha and they also need a backup catcher? We've seen it happen.
Follow each other. Yeah.
And they 100%. Follow each other. So it's like, Joey might have overdone the Plawecki thing, but knowing how it is something for these guys who are up for contracts to step out and mention specifically that they're upset about it. And I think that's also the disconnect you hear. Alex does a good job of being a good soldier, but every now and then you see like behind the curtain a little bit.
He'll drop some hints. He's good at sprinkling that in there.
Correct. That sometimes some of these things that happen obviously make his job harder. And that isn't Heim's primary job, but it goes with the job.
Yeah, no, it does. And with the rotation discussion, I know Rich Hill is a big part of that. We had talked about it earlier today, you and I, but I would hope he's back personally. And the one thing that's just hitting me right now, and Joey and I had mentioned this a few weeks ago, on the broadcast, he had talked about potentially just pitching half a season, which I have a lot of thoughts about. The top one being, I don't know if he has the luxury of requesting that at this point of his career, but would you be okay with that if Rich Hill was like the second half of the season in 23 on the Red Sox? Or would it be like, here's the deal, Rich, we will give you $5 million again, like we did this year, and we expect you to make as many starts as you did this year, which has value. At most of the games Rich Hill has pitched in, the Red Sox have been in those games by the time he comes out. Obviously, the big issue is that he doesn't go deep into games. I think there's only been 3 starts this season. He's logged 6 innings pitched. So where are you at with Rich Hill and potentially coming back for his age 43 season with the Red Sox?
Well, again, normally Heim probably wouldn't do that, but I think you have to look at players as human beings and say to yourself, okay, no one else is going to compare themselves. How old will he be? 44 next year?
I think 43, I believe.
43. Yeah. So, I mean, it's not like other guys in the team saying, well, why can't I get the deal Rich has? Well, how about you play like, you know, 15 years in the big leagues and you do all these other things and you almost set a record for the amount of starts at your age. If you do that, we'll give you the same thing 15 years from now. Okay. Clemens did it once or twice, I believe.
Houston, yeah. He did the pitch home games thing, which I had never heard of before, but he only started in Houston.
Yeah, that's weirder. I think when you look at it, because I was saying, look at Wacha. Wacha went down for the first time, my recollection is like in June or something like that, right?
Yeah.
And so if he was gearing up for that, was ready, as long as you have enough starters, because Heim will say the same thing. You need to go into a season with potentially 8 starters. I don't want 4 of those guys to be rookies.
Yeah.
I don't think you go in with the adept saying, oh, yeah, well, we got these, you know, and no offense, I like Nick Pivetta, but, you know, he's probably a 4th or 5th starter on a good team, you know. You can get innings out of him, and he'll have stretches where he's really good, like he did the 1 month he was especially good this year. But I wouldn't be averse to it. I think you got to compensate financially. You know, I mean, pay him on a pro rata basis or per game start. But if that was the reason, and he's going to be your sixth or seventh starter as you look at them, yeah, I'd do it.
Yeah, no, I would too. And it's going to come down to how many guys are they going to add to this roster. I'll be very interested to see that. How many new faces are there by next year? Because if it's the trade deadline approach, not many. And I have to think that Haim is looking at that and thinking, okay, you got to think there's a little regret with the deadline approach that you didn't get anything for JD or Nate. Obviously, the Vasquez deal probably looks better now than it did then. But I am very interested to see how many people they're going to bring in for 2023 and understanding the urgency. You and I have talked about this before, but this ownership group rarely allows back-to-back bad seasons to happen. They want to maybe overcompensate after a bad season happens, an underperforming season, to try to have the Sox in a position for success the next year. So I think that's got to factor into it as well. The urgency has to be there. And if you finish under 500 when you were two wins away from the World Series, there has to be urgency. Of course there's urgency. That has to naturally create urgency heading into next season because there's a lot of question marks. What would be the first thing you would attack? Is it the bullpen?
The bullpen, I would say there's three priorities. The bullpen, mainly because it's so bad. And that isn't like spending, you know, a $50 million four-year contract with, you know, a younger version of Chapman. It's not that. It's like, I didn't realize until I read the paper today how good a year Adam Ottavino had. He's got an ERA just over two. I mean, there's Daniel Bards out there. There's who's the guy with the Cubs now who used to be with the Yankees? Robertson. Yeah. Give me two or three of those guys. You know, you almost need four to hope two of them work. It's like the year that Koji was so good. He was not the intended closer, as you remember. You know, so he was really option three. But you had to at least have those other guys, and then at least you had a guy competent. That wasn't happening with this roster. So I think he has to have that. The other thing, and you and I have talked about this, I mean, assuming they're going to have to trade for somebody, because if you look at the guys who are free agents, it's like Rondon and other guys, and Trey Mancini may be one of the better outfielders. But I think if he's true, and if he's letting on of how many guys they're trying to get on the 40-man roster, that who are capable of being put on a 40-man roster, I would trade three or four of them, you know, with somebody to get a team that either has the equivalent of when Chris Archer was traded or somebody else who you're trading just because, oh, it's 1 or 2 years from free agency. The deals other teams made when they've got guys from the A's and the Reds last year. We should be that team this year. I know part of the goal this year was the whole luxury tax and the threshold, which also makes me wonder why they didn't get rid of Eovaldi and Martinez. But
if it mattered that much, they probably would have done that at the deadline. Yeah.
And you and I had this discussion again today. And I know it's tough to be the general manager in Boston. I mean, there are fewer baseball fans this year than normal because I think Red Sox fans have become more fair weather in the last 10 years, you know, that they're followed when they're really good. So they're almost irrelevant because you never even hear them on the sports anymore. I mean, it's Patriots 24/7, even though there's many questions about the Patriots. But given that they have to do that, I think he has to, you know, come up with a much better. And I'm with you. They're not going to sign Pablo and Hanley Ramirez. That was the most knee-jerk reaction. Or trade for Adrian Gonzalez. There's another case where they didn't understand McCann. You know, who did they let go? Beltre and Martinez is catcher. And brought in guys Crawford and Adrian Gonzalez who didn't play in this market. I'm hoping Haim is better at that. But you and I also had the conversation. They need a good outfielder, you know.
Oh, big time. Yeah, no, yeah. You had mentioned this, and it's a really good point. That you go back year after year after year with the Red Sox, they almost always have a Hall of Fame caliber outfielder, not just an all-star.
Correct.
So it's been constant that one of the outfielders on the Red Sox is at Hall of Fame capabilities and caliber. And now it's not, you know, you're not looking at that with the setup that they have on this team. I mean, you have a second baseman playing center. And Verdugo, I think, has been solid and right. Overall, I haven't had a lot of like, oh, what's going on there? He lost the ball in the sun. Have you ever seen a team lose a ball in the sun more than this team has?
No.
It's crazy. It's all the time.
about four guys. It's you know.
Yeah, it's not just one guy. So if anything, Durant's probably like, thank God, at least other people are also losing the ball.
Correct.
But that's been tough. No, but that was a good point of when's the last time they haven't had an all-star, even just an all-star caliber outfielder. It's been a long time.
It's been a long time. And the top guy they have in the minors now is, I think he's at A-level, Blease, you know, the Dominican kid they signed a couple of years ago, who apparently is a 5'2 player. Cassis raves about him. The kid's not even 19. Mm. So he's probably 2 or 3 years away. He'll be up with, you know, York and, you know, he'll in Meyer. But that's too far away. The Red Sox fandom is too immediate.
They're not going to wait for that. No, there's no chance. No,
and you can't, because, you know, there's just no buzz about this team. And the ownership can't handle that. As you made the great point of, you know, in 2012, bringing back the 2004 team, you know.
One of the funnier experiences of a game my dad and I have ever been to. We went to a game in 2012. And they did an 8-year anniversary of the 2004 team and had duck boats. This is like September of the end of one of the most disappointing seasons ever. And duck boats going around. And like, I think Tito was up there, which made it even a little weirder.
Exactly.
The next season, you had Francona on one of the boats. Like, what's going on right now? This is so weird. They're throwing these little squishy baseballs into the crowd.
I know.
You don't want that. You got to learn from your past mistakes. We don't want that to be happening again. Winding down here on episode 60, I did want to give a batting title update to the minute. This is to the second. Updated batting title rankings in the American League. Luis Arise and Bogarts flip-flopped like three times during the games on Sunday. Arise is at 317. Bogey and Aaron Judge are now tied at 316. Judge has made a real push. He was around 300 just like a week and a half ago. He's at 316 now. And Jose Abreu's at 309. So for a while, it looked like a two-man race. Now it looks like a three-man race, maybe a four-man race if Abreu gets a little hot here. How much do you care about the batting title? I've always cared a lot about it growing up. You know, I know in our computer room there at the old house, I'd be, you know, going in there, going to MLB.com every morning when Bill Miller had a chance. I know Manny almost caught him in 03. And just, I care a lot about it. In September, I'm always following the batting title race. How much do you care about it? And do you think it's been diminished a little bit as people seem to act like average doesn't matter anymore?
No, I definitely think it's been diminished. I mean, you certainly look at Tony Gwynn and Wade Boggs, and you're trying to think, okay, because they also were good for OPP, but you know, I think the power is weighed may a little more heavily than it used to be, you know. Yeah. So I think that's where people look at that more, and the whole thing, which means Judge would blow everybody away. I mean, you talk about a guy who's had the perfect year leading into free agency.
I mean, you look at his on his baseball reference page. What they do is they bold a stat that leads the league. His like whole stat line is bolded. He leads the league in everything. He's over 1,100 OPS. I'd like to see the list of guys that have finished over 1,100. There's some seasons where guys don't finish over 1,000.
Correct.
And he's at 1,100 right now. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah. So, but I think you're right. And then to have a right-handed batter in Fenway win a title, I believe the only ones I can recall were Carney, Lansford, and Nomar. Mm. All the other guys were lefties or Bill Miller, a switch hitter. Fenway is generally a better hitter for left-handed hitters than righties. So it definitely matters. And you've made the point, maybe it's one of the salvageable things about a regrettable season is that he does that.
Yeah. I mean, they have what, I think 7 home games left, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And it's going to make that matter a little bit. Like I genuinely care about following that. Could be JD's last game with the Red Sox. I don't think people are going to care as much about that than a potential batting title for Xander Bogaerts. But nothing against JD. It's more just how things have gone this year. It's been a tough season for him. And I know we talked about it earlier today, but I'll be interested to see what his market is. I really don't know what JD's market's going to be coming off of 0 innings in the field. Not like that ever helped him, but at least it gives you a little more diversity than needing to be a DH full time. And his power numbers, everything's down. He has the go-ahead hit there on Friday, for whatever that's worth. But yeah, it's been a tough season for JD overall. And I think it's, you know, we've talked about it before, but it worked for both sides, right? You know, it clearly worked for him. He kept opting in. And I think the money overall made sense. And he was a huge part of 2018. He'll be remembered fondly. This year, the further we get from this season, I think people will remember it less in terms of what it meant for JD. Red Sox wise, people aren't going to forget how disappointing this was coming off of 2021. But you think, I mean, what offers do you think JD is going to get? Because that market's going to be, I think, pretty small, honestly.
I would think so. And what is he going to be, 36 next year? I think he's 35 now, right?
Yeah, he'll be right around there. He going to be, what is he right now? He's 35. Yeah, he'll be 36. Yeah.
Yeah.
In August next year, towards the end of the season. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Pete Abraham had that today, that how the parallel I told you this today with he and Jim Rice is kind of eerie, you know, and Rice lost it fairly fast too at 35. I think some of Jim's was eyesight that you probably could have done a better job of correcting sooner, but, I wouldn't think there'd be much. I mean, otherwise you do what Kike did and sign a 1-year prove it contract.
Yeah.
But what
is he might do? But it's hard to do 1 year when you're 36.
That's what I was going to finish the sentence. They're going to say it's hard to do that when you're 36. It's like, okay, well now a year from now, you'd be 37, you know? Yeah. So,
and still somebody that's not on his feet much.
So yeah. I agree with you. I think even for the Red Sox, for one of the rare times, I would be okay if they didn't have a DH.
Yeah.
Because if you're going to have Hosmer on the team and Cassis and Christian Arroyo and Story, let's assume Bogarts comes back. Now I've got enough guys to rotate in there that are lefty and righty that I can give guys days off, and which seems more important. Oh, the other thing I would get in this offseason, Stephen, is a better trainer or a guy who can evaluate an injury when it happens.
Spear had a really good piece on it. It was a tough year for that. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know who the people are. They're probably wonderful human beings, but they've either misdiagnosed people. How many people have gone down and we think they're back in 3 or 4 or 5 days, and they're either not back for a month or 6 weeks or their season's over? I would look at that. Maybe they just had the worst year. Maybe they were like JD and they just had a really lousy year and they're really better than this. But
yeah. Haim references the baseball gods a lot, maybe a little too much. You might have to come back on that a little bit because I know people don't love that. But it was either Jim McCaffrey or Spear had a really good article on how it's eye-opening for a team like the Sox, who have actually pretty typically done well at avoiding a lot of injuries to key guys. And that's been a huge part of it this year. But clearly, I think you and I would agree that we don't want this to be looked at this season as like, oh, injuries got the best of us. No. That's just the tip of the iceberg. There's plenty other issues outside of the injuries that need to be addressed.
You look at the guys the Rays lost, the Phillies lost. I mean, the Phillies lost Bryce Harper, one of the top six players in baseball, and gained ground while he was out. And not because he was out, they just played well.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to be able to do it when your stars and other players aren't out. And clearly, I think a big part of it was obviously the Red Sox had to rely on too many rookies, especially in the rotation. There was a time there in July where you look at the box score, TBD was one of the best starters on the Red Sox. And just in terms of appearances, it was constantly TBD. Every series, TBD, TBD, TBD. Getting so sick of that. But our series MVPs and closing thoughts are coming up next on episode 60 of Inside the Monster. All righty, we are back on episode 60 of Inside the Monster. It is time for our series MVPs. I'll get mine out of the way. Reese McGuire hit .666 in this series with 3 RBIs, consistently proving, at least, you know, since he's been here, that he could be the guy. He could be your starter next year and allow the team to focus on other areas. And, you know, maybe that does finally close the book on the Christian Vasquez era in Boston. Who do you have for your series MVP, Dad?
Okay, this is kind of in the good job, good effort category, but I guess I'd give it to JD because even in a year where he had trouble driving in guys in scoring position, he got one of our 3 hits on Friday, thank God for the 8 walks, and drove in a run and actually scored in a sac fly with perfect timing today. Didn't exactly stick the landing, as you said, Stephen, but he did get home, and that was definitely a good effort.
It was. JD, yeah. I have never seen someone that hates sliding more than he does. It looks painful every time, and he gets up like, oh God, it's like he broke something. I gotta stop doing this. So
yeah.
Again, I never want to sound negative about JD. JD knows what his strengths are, he knows what his weaknesses are. Sliding is one of the weaknesses, but I will be very interested to see what happens with JD Martinez in the offseason. It is time for closing thoughts. I figure we talk a little Pats real quick. I know we watched the Patriots-Steelers game today. I am curious of your general thoughts of this Patriots team now at 1-1 and how things are going to look for the rest of the season. It feels like it's around a 500 team, not just obviously now, but down the road, closer to the holidays. But what do you think about this Pats team after two games?
Yeah, I think that's a fair assessment. I think you're going to know more. You always know more further into the season. But the Ravens, what did they give up, 28 points in the fourth period? So for what is supposed to be a good defensive team. To Tua, who didn't look that impressive against us. Actually, the defense hasn't been half bad the last 2 weeks. I think they're kind of thin. I mean, Duggar got nicked up today, but Phillips came back. Their safeties are excellent. The offense has to be a little better.
Crisper. It's just Mac was not accurate.
If I were to predict, I think they're going to be either, 7-9 or something, or 9-7, something like that, I guess, or 10-7, I guess. No, they won't be 9-8. 8-9 or 9-8 would be where I think they're going to be.
Yeah, somewhere around 500 feels right. I know they go 10-7 last year and even had the one seed for a little bit, I believe. I think they were the top team in the AFC after that Bills Monday night, win fest there. And this Steelers game was their first road win since then. So
I know,
if it feels like it was a while ago, it was a while ago. But yeah, we'll see with the Pats. I think it's, I always look at them as over the years, and even back with doing Section 10, it was always, Brady's going to get us to spring training. if the season is go well, hey, doesn't matter. Brady's going to get us back to when we're in Fort Myers and everything's all great. And they haven't had the luxury of that, obviously, since he left. But we'll see. We'll see if this is going
to
be.
And also, it used to be when they got to Thanksgiving, their best games were ahead of them.
I know.
Which really, Brady's last year and the last 2 years, the opposite's been true. I'd be more encouraged if they finished strong.
Yeah, yeah. That would at least give you a little bit more energy.
Because we think this is a bridge year, all of us anyway. So, that to me would mean more.
Yeah, in closing here, I was curious, because I've thought about this before. I've been asked this a lot of, favorite moment or favorite game, thing that sticks out from Fenway Park. We've obviously, how many games would we go to in the 90s? You were bringing me games all the time. I remember for your company, Jay Cashman, I say we had that box. I didn't donate $1 to that box, but we had the box seats. And as a kid, I thought those were just going to be like our God-given seats. I thought that we were going to be in this nice suite the whole time. And, we're up there for the 99 Home Run Derby, which was awesome. But is there one game that we've been to for you that sticks out of like, remember that moment? I typically point to that Jose Canseco when he hit a home run into the lights. And I think I remember asking you, have you ever seen that before? You're like, no, I don't think that's really a normal thing to happen, because he was obviously on all the juice at that point. But is there one thing that sticks out from a game that we've been to that you remember?
I would say the Pedro's home debut, which was kid's opening day against Seattle. He was so dominant. What did he strike out? Like 14, 15 guys in that
Something
game?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, he was
Got
awesome.
Griffey, yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was probably one of the most memorable games. So the fact I was there with you and Dan added to it, but that would probably be one of the best ones, I would say.
Yeah. In terms of importance, we went to game one of the 13 World Series. That was a
phenomenal
night.
Oh, what an atmosphere. Awesome. Everyone thought they were playing with house money, which with 2014, we realized we were, because we finished in last in the division the next year. And I don't remember a more joyous crowd walking into a playoff game, because you'd been crushed the year before and they were terrible the year after, and everything lined up, that year. I mean, everybody they signed to a 1 year contract, whether it was, Koji or whomever, everyone played well. Napoli, Gomes. It was just a great year. Shane Victorino, everything's going to be all right. I mean, that was a great evening too.
Yeah. When it comes down to greatest thing I've seen at Fenway, it's got to be the grand slam by Poppy in game two of the ALCS there, because I think that's part of why the house money thing was the vibe at Fenway, because they really should have lost that series to the Tigers. I know overall, if you looked at their collective batting average, it was probably in the ones. It was really just a couple of huge hits that they had in that series. But I also remember that That it was the weather. The weather was great for for a World Series. It was like warm and just nice. And they got up big early. And so you're thinking, are they just going to sweep the Cardinals? I know they're used to doing that. They're just going to do it again. So I know some, a little drama there in St. Louis, but able to come back to Fenway and win in six. So that was definitely pretty cool. But yeah, I mean, we've been to endless games. It's been awesome. I mean, the fact that I'm at this point now is really, I know we joke about this, but I'm basically doing what you would have wanted to do. this is basically what you would have wanted to do. So I'm playing it out for the both of us.
There you are. There weren't as many options back in those days. If you weren't Bob Costas or Ken Coleman, you didn't have a job, So you had to get a real job.
Exactly. You had to be doing real work instead of this.
That is
very true.
That's right.
But Dad, thank you for making your ITM debut. We will have you on in the future, of course. But big co-host today. So how did it go? How do you think? I thought you were great, but you feel like this can be a future role for you here?
Oh, sure. I mean, it just sounds like you and I talking in the family room. But
and mom's probably can they stop talking about this? This is going on for too long.
Exactly. No, it was a lot of fun. And you and Joey have a great chemistry. He really makes me laugh. He's got such a quick wit, that
He's
I
funny.
Think you've developed a really good show. I'm proud of you. And mom is
Thank
too.
You. Thank you. I definitely appreciate it. And we'll try to keep growing this thing. I can't think it's going to go this poorly next year for the team. I really can't. I don't envision this being back-to-back seasons. We're going to have all offseason talk about Xander and all that stuff, but I'd be stunned if this was done again next year. I can't see it happening. And I know I'm trying to be optimistic here, but I would assume you would agree that we're not going to see a repeat of this season next season.
Well, I mean, I was looking at the payrolls today, and the Yankees, whatever, $226 million, we're $207 million, and then I think the Blue Jays are $180 million. Then you go down to the Rays, like $80 or $90 million, and then the Orioles are $40 million. I mean, you can't do that. Now, to Heim's credit, he's had the tough job of getting them down there, right? And that's where I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. He was kind of had a gun to his head and had to trade Mookie. People argue you didn't have to, but they were in a tough pickle. He's got some latitude now. So the rubber is going to hit the road. He's alluding to the fact that this will be a big off season. And that's the understatement of the year, is that this will be a big off season because the franchise can't afford it. I mean, they're being passed by the other sports franchises in Boston, and that's not a position that the ownership is accustomed to.
A lot of moves coming up this offseason, and we have, I'll just announce it, I like teasing interviews coming up. We got a Jake Peavy interview coming up this week, which I'm very excited about. Jake Peavy's somebody that I've never gotten the chance to talk to. I'm sure he's got a lot of cool stories. I know you and I just talked about 2013. I'm sure, I can't wait to dive into where the duck boat's at now. I know we bought that duck boat. So Jake Peavy interview this week will be a lot of fun. Dad, thanks again for hopping on. We were going to have you on in the future as well. But this is that's a full episode. That was you can send your I'll send the payment to you. I know you're getting paid for a guest appearance. This is a full payment here.
I'll pay you back
for everything that you've given me. It'll be covered in this one episode.
Your whole tuition to Endicott in this episode.
Yeah, that's going to be covered for this one episode right here.
Totally unexpected. Wow, that's out of left field.
I know this is great to get all these years later, but next you'll hear from us. I'll probably be heading into this Red Series. Got a two gamer coming up in Cincinnati. 16 games left on the 2022 Red Sox season. For Joey Capone, for Alan Perrault, I am Steve Perrault. Go Sox, kid!
Inside the Monster is a production of Odyssey in partnership with the Boston Red Sox. The show is produced by me, Steve Perrault. Our executive producer is Lena Glazer, mixing and video editing by Joey Capone. Special thanks to the Red Sox and Major League Baseball for their contributions to the production of this podcast.